Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
J Cross, how good would you say you are at the guitar?
I would say I...
Your three choices are beginner.
Yes.
Intermediate.
Yes.
Or advanced.
Probably beginner.
Okay, excellent. How would you like to move up to intermediate?
I'd really like to be an intermediate guitar player. That's the only thing I've ever wanted to be.
Good. That's about as far as you'll get.
Yes.
Unless you use Guitar Tricks.
Okay, tell me more.
Guitar Tricks is an excellent website to teach you how to move from beginner to intermediate to advanced guitar.
Okay.
Whether you're just starting out or whether, you know, you could be, you should be better than you are.
Like me.
Indeed.
Yes.
Guitar Tricks will help you move through those stages as a guitar player. And good for you, J Cross. We have worked together with Guitar Tricks to bring a 14-day free trial to not only you, but to the listeners of the Guitar Nerds podcast.
So that means I can try it for 14 days, and if I'm not into it, just cancel it.
You can, indeed.
But I'm probably going to be into it.
I think you probably will.
Okay.
You'll notice a swift advancement of your guitar skills.
Excellent.
So do you want to know where you can get this offer?
Where can you get the offer?
GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks.
Can you repeat that for me?
I can. GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks.
Is there like an app that you can use, or do you have to do it on your computer?
GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton. Joining me on today's podcast is Fender's J Cross.
You're doing a great job so far.
Please, come on, let me at least
okay,
get
sorry.
This. Is Fender's J Cross.
Yeah, great work.
Is Boss's Matt Knight.
Keep your chin up, Joe.
And joining us for the first time, the internet's Mary Spender.
Hello.
Owned by the internet. Is that what that's suggesting?
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
catching on now. More and more people are saying it to me.
The internet's Mary Spender. Yeah, it's because you're multi-channel.
I know.
I've made it through the intro.
Well,
you didn't really, because you said joining me today, and Marco says joining us this evening.
No, but most people don't listen to it in the evening, Matt Knight, so...
How do you know? Have you got them?
People listen
stats?
To it, yeah. People listen to it on the way to work.
Okay.
That's why we
when
don't
do you
swear.
Listen to When do you listen to the Guitar Nerds podcast?
I do not.
Oh, okay.
I tried listening to some...
I do.
You won't anymore.
I tried to listen to some other podcasts recently, and I just got bored.
Well, I mean, you're so far a champion of the format,
well,
so
thanks,
congratulations.
Yeah. Anyway, so the next bit in the podcast that Mark Packham normally does is talking to everyone about sort of how they're doing. I'm good. I mean, I'm missing Mark Packham.
Okay. I don't understand where this hierarchy came from, that when Mark's not here, you automatically... the next in charge.
It's because I'm the only one who knows how to press record on the Zoom H6.
Okay.
And also, because none of you guys want to have to go home and edit this
You're not going to do that. You're going to send it to Mark, and he's going to do it on the train tomorrow. He just texts us that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to try and take some sort of credit for it. But
Jay, no. You have to think, if me or you like hosted it, like who would be the interesting ones? Like Joe.
Oh, that's true.
You know, you're interesting, and I know all the stuff. So, you know, Joe's...
I'm happy being the comic foil. I mean, I was thinking maybe we should have asked Mary to host this.
Oh, that would have been good.
That would have been tough.
No, it would have been fine.
My first Guitar Nerds podcast.
Loads of series have, like, guest hosts. Like,
go on. Name one other podcast that ever has a guest host.
Well, we could be trendsetters.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so we actually do have loads of guitar-related stuff to talk about today on this podcast, everyone. So we'll roll around the room and see how everyone's doing. Mary Spender, as our guest for the first time. Well, not for the first time, because you actually did a Patreon episode with Mark Packham.
I did.
A few weeks ago.
I think this is the first time that we've ever had anybody who started as a guest end up as a host.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't think anybody's ever transcended in that manner before.
Mikey Demas?
No.
No.
I don't think Mikey has ever been a guest or a host.
Hasn't he?
No.
Oh.
It was pure persistence on my part and just messaging Joe every week being like, when can I come and be a host?
Yeah, that is actually true. She forced her way onto the podcast as soon as she heard that Mark wasn't going to be on this week. But it's good because I would rather we had four people.
Three's always bad, especially when one of them is you.
Me.
Yeah,
exactly. Anyway, Mary, how's it going? What have you been up to this week that's been guitar related? You've just had some new videos come out on the Andertons channel.
I have, yes. The beginning of my new series, which is going to be called I Always Wanted to Try, which is quite exciting and just basically means that I'm a spoilt brat in a guitar store and get to pick up absolutely anything I want and then just give it a play, sing a song and talk about it at the end.
That's totally cool. Have you been... So have you just got free range then to choose whatever you like?
Within reason, yeah, I think so.
That's pretty cool.
Have they given you a key yet?
No, not quite yet.
No, I mean, like, are the guitars locked up? I've only been to Anderson's once, and I bought a guitar there that day.
Did you? So,
yeah, I did, yeah.
I can't believe you did.
Of course I did.
What did you get?
I bought an offset telly, one of the way before I worked for Fender... I bought a special edition Fender offset Telecaster.
Which, incidentally, you didn't buy from me and the shop that you actually used to work for.
Yeah, well, you know. I thought
I'd bought it from his other friend.
Yeah. but no, are the guitars locked up or can people just walk in and take stuff? This probably isn't appropriate for...
Really?
No, okay.
No.
But yeah, so the first thing you chose was a Gretsch White Falcon.
Yes.
Which is a little unusual for you, I guess. That's not the sort of thing you'd normally play.
No, but a few of my favourite guitarists had played it, and I just saw it. I saw the price tag as well, and I was like, I'm going to have a go on that. And
How much is a Gretsch White Falcon these days?
7,000?
Oh, it would have been a custom shop one then, a Stephen Stern Masterbuilt, I'd have thought.
I think so.
Yeah.
It was the 19... Which was it? So it was introduced in 1954. So it was a 19... Yeah,
right.
1959, maybe?
You know, we can cheat. If you've got a computer in front of you, you can go onto the Anton's website and have a look.
I could just do that.
No, she's trying to do it properly, Matt Knight.
We all know that I'm the one with the computer. And I don't really have the answers. The internet holds the answers for me.
That's true. So, yeah. So
I think it was a... MIJ one, because those Stephen Stern ones are like super rare.
Yeah, I think it might have been one of the...
Although if you did try a £7,000 Gretsch, that is awesome.
Yeah.
That too is awesome.
But maybe I need to look that up again after having made a video about it.
What made you choose like a White Falcon? Because that's it's a different scale length and it's not a solid body.
Yeah. I am flexible when it comes to what I want to try out. And for that one, I just thought it would be, you know, kind of different. And I actually had an Ibanez Art Core back in the day. So So I like those hollow bodies. I just don't own one right now, so I thought I'd give it a go.
Cool.
And I guess that's the point. If you're trying to, if the series is called I've Always Wanted to Try One of Those, it's about putting yourself out of your comfort zone and trying something a little bit different. Yeah. Which is inherently, yeah, I think, one of the big issues with guitar stores is, but you always, they're a very intimidating place if you don't work there or hang out there all the time. And even I feel like that now sometimes, going into the shop that I used to manage. You know, you go in there and it's like, oh God, yeah, I don't really know what I'm allowed to do.
No, well, it's also no one likes you there.
But... Well, yeah, fair enough.
But I also was really lucky to support Joey Landreth at his show in London last, not just the Saturday Gone, but the week before. And I got to see him play through a Dumble, which he'd borrowed just specifically for the gig. And it was very, very cool. And also I got to see his pedal board up close and personal that is just also extraordinary, and I'm very envious of it. But I'm not actually sure where I would begin with all that tech on stage.
Really? I'm surprised that he's the sort of player with a big pedal board.
He has varying tones in a live show. Like, he really, really goes for it. It's quite impressive.
That's so awesome. Imagine, I can't believe you got to use a Dumble. I mean, how much even is a Dumble these days?
Well, there was that one that I posted up in the Guitar Nerds forum. Thanks for your support. where one of my colleagues saw one in Nashville in a secondhand store for $90,000.
Yeah, supposedly the guy he borrowed it from had two.
Wow, that's ridiculous.
And it was phenomenal.
And did you play the show full band?
No, I did it solo. I did it with my a little Thunder pickup in my Vizier Indus. So I used my two new Orange amps.
Was that the first outing for the dual Orange amps out?
It is. It was. Yeah. And it sounded great. People whooped my tone. It was such a guitar audience. It was really great. And I'm actually really glad. I drove to London from Bristol that day and I got stuck in traffic, and I just spent like 4 hours just suddenly realizing that I was about to play in front of an audience of just absolute guitar nerds, and I just had to walk up on stage and just get it over and done with and just try and do my best.
You should probably, for listeners that haven't seen your guitar, the Vizier with the little Thunder pickup, you should maybe explain that guitar and that pickup, because it's quite a unique instrument and a really unique setup for a solo artist, I guess, to use.
Yeah, absolutely. I discovered the Little Thunder pickup at NAMM in 2015, and I just thought it was going to be absolutely the next big thing. I'm still in awe of it every time I plug it in, and it has a proper bass signal, so you can plug it into a bass amp and a guitar amp at the same time with a stereo XY cable. And I've got it in a Vizier Excalibur Indus, so it's a slightly deeper body than my GV Rock, which I'd actually bought for the Little Thunder pickup first, but the body was too shallow, so I had to get a second guitar. But it just adds a little thunder to your performance, and it's pretty cool to switch on and off and make your set a bit more versatile when it's just me.
Because it has.
Do you lose all of the dry signal with that, or can you like blend in some of the dry signal, or is there some sort of like extra control with it?
What? So the bass signal.
Yeah. Or do you get like both the lower octave and the original signal at the same time?
Yeah, they stereo
stereo out. So you get the guitar. Just as is, and if you just played it through a mono cable, it would just be the guitar, and then the bass, it's better going through a bass amp and then miking up the bass amp. It sounds a little bit better because it still is obviously a guitar scale length, so it doesn't have the same beefiness as a bass guitar would, but it does add just, I've got it set to just one octave below, but it can drop down to two octaves, so if you're playing really high up the neck, then you can switch it down. It's really, really cool. It's really, really fun to play with and write songs with too.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
We should get one for mod mode.
Yeah, we should. But actually building in an octaver into a pickup is a great idea. And of course, to do that, you have to build an octave that actually tracks.
Tracks properly, yeah.
Imagine that, Matt Knight, an octave that tracks.
Do you have any issue cording with it? Or do you have to sort of build that around it?
It can be quite noisy, but weirdly enough, I took it back in 2017. So I only got it in maybe I got it July last year. And I was having a little bit of noise trouble. But Andy Ault, the creator, just took my guitar, plugged it into his laptop and did an update on the pickup, which is crazy. And you also charge the pickup via mini USB cable. So you don't need batteries. And it lasts for like 8 hours or something. And he just did an update fresh for NAMM 2017, and it sounded great, and it still does. There's slight latency, obviously, but it's not really noticeable in a live setting. Recording-wise, you would probably notice it.
Right, yeah. That's pretty cool. But you've actually, you bought a bass recently. You're expanding into... actual bass territory, but something went wrong with it. I saw that you had to take it into the shop because of something with the pickups.
I think I was really stupid. I got my other half to carry it in the car on the way home, just hold it, and I think it got knocked in some way, or the pickup was just ready and waiting to die, and it was secondhand, so you know, but it, when I was testing it out, it sounded great, and then I got it home and it didn't work at all. It sounded really, really bad. I even sent you like a video of the yeah. noise that was coming from the amp, and it sounded terrible. So I've taken it to the shop and it's getting a new pickup right now as we speak.
What have you gone for pickup wise?
I've actually left it in I've left it up to my lovely guitar tech, and just, you know, probably something cheap and cheerful, just because I just need something for the studio rather than like live or anything like that.
Ah, that's cool. And I don't think you mentioned it, but Jay Cross and Mark Packham would be happy because it is a P bass.
It is a P bass, yeah. Yes.
Best bass of all time. Best instrument of all time, if I remember correctly.
Literally the blandest instrument of all time.
Well,
but
you
certainly,
know.
Yeah, certainly, whatever.
Hang on, you actually said that it was a good choice.
Oh, yeah.
You thought it was better than going...
The mask is slipping.
I said it was a good choice when I wasn't recording a podcast whilst we're on the podcast.
Hold on, this internet persona.
I hate everything. I hate all boring, standard, traditional instruments are rubbish. Okay, cool. So Matt Knight also has some pretty swag news this
Keep
week.
Using this term.
What term?
Swag.
I'm bringing swag back. It's becoming a thing in the office at work. Actually, I've been obviously saying it so much that
your colleagues who are 10 years younger than you are getting really annoyed with you.
No, they started saying it too.
I'm not sure about that.
They did. One of them said it the other day, and he's so young that Jurassic Park came out before he was born.
Oh my god!
Yeah, don't. It's horrible. Anyway, Matt Knight, you've got some massive news.
Yeah. I'm leaving.
He is leaving. Matt Knight is leaving, everyone. Just like Mark Packham has gone.
Who?
Exactly. No one even remembers him now. Mm. I'm the new host of Guitar Nerds.
Oh, God.
I won't be leaving the podcast, and yeah, I'm not leaving my job, but I am leaving the country. I am moving to Japan.
How about that?
That is pretty massive. But the reason why you're moving to Japan is pretty awesome as well.
Yeah, I'm going for 3 months to go and work in the BOSS headquarters in Hamamatsu, Japan. Doing basically what I do now, but helping out the Japanese team and, basically working on the engineering floor. They all work on one floor, so like the engineering guys, the marketing guys are all on the kind of...
So you're going floor, to so. Japan to be a T-boy?
Yep, but it does mean that I get one of those awesome jackets that I've wanted for years.
What jacket?
Because all the engineers wear the same.
Back to the Future.
They wear they all wear these like silver like jackets with
what?
Like a pink and white stripe on them. Yeah, it's like all the engineers get a special jacket. and I want that jacket.
I bet you have to. I bet you get presented with the jacket after you've worked there for a period of time, and I bet that period of time is 3 months, which is exactly why you're only allowed to work there for that long.
But yeah, so this is massive.
Let's not dwell on the jackets.
So Matt is leaving and moving to Japan, which does actually mean, listeners, yes, Matt Knight is going to become slightly more occasional on the podcast, because Japan is at a very... We had a lot of meetings about this and about how we were going to work the podcast, but essentially it boiled down to the fact that we were going to have to record at 8 a.m. and I drink a lot, and that is not a time that I'm awake at. So it's going to be occasional.
Joe, I can't believe you won't give up the booze just so you talk to me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But yeah.
Sorry, as he takes a swig of beer. Yeah.
But in addition to you moving to Japan, actually you've been doing some other cool things that are slightly more directly guitar related. You built us a mini board this week.
I did, because the lovely Chris at Custom Pedal Boards built us the sort of demo board for Guitar Nerds, which, you know, while me and Joe won't be able to shoot videos, I'm going to steal and take to Japan with me. Purposely built to fit an MS3 on it. So I've built a mini pedal board with an MS3, one to take to Japan, because I probably won't be able to have an amp while I'm out there. So kind of build a mini pedal board and then take my laptop and an audio interface. Two, so we can use it for demos, so we can use a loop switcher for demos. And three, just to kind of have a little bit of a mini pedal board to mess around on.
Hmm. And actually, listeners, we've mentioned them a few times, but if you haven't checked out custompedalboards.co.uk, you absolutely should. They're some of the best kind of built to spec pedal boards for people, largely for people who use switches. But the fact that you can get pedal boards that are designed around specific switches is great and really useful. And also, they probably do the best kind of patch leads for switcher-based pedal boards as well, because they can be so awkward, because you've got to get, like, you need sort of straight to angled and things like that. And unless you're going to buy a kit, that can be a bit tricky. So they do loads of stuff. Definitely worth checking out anyway if you never have.
Matt, what are you going to be able to take with you to Japan? You said that you can't take, you won't be able to take an amp, and you're just going to take that little pedal board. What guitars? Are you going to take a guitar with you? Are you going to buy one when you're out there?
I mean, that would be the dream, wouldn't it? I can't wait to go to some of the music stores out there. It's going to be so good. Basically, I'm going to put together a shopping list and then just like try and find it all. So, and there'll be so much cool secondhand stuff. I think I'm going to ship my Music Man over, or I'm going to take it on hand luggage.
Yeah.
I'm undecided. But yeah, I think I'll take the Music Man, and then I'm going to ship the pedal board to Japan ahead of time. But I don't really want to be without a guitar, and I probably could borrow one when I'm out there. But you know, when it's just sometimes you like borrow a guitar and you're like, oh, thanks, but it just doesn't feel nice, or it doesn't feel like your guitar. And then like playing guitar is never as enjoyable. So I think I'm going to just find out ahead of time and probably take hand carry the Music Man with me.
Cool beans.
Probably a good excuse to get a mono gig bag.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. The best gig bags.
I want the double one so badly.
Yeah, they're great, the double mono bags. Now, I didn't realize double bags were quite so common. Like, I didn't know that Fender put one out in their Urban series for like £40 for a double gig bag.
I didn't know that either.
No, exactly. But the double gig bags were important. Like, who gigs one guitar? No one gigs one guitar.
I remember it being, when I was working in the shop, it was a total nightmare, because people would come in and ask for them all the time, and we couldn't get them.
Yeah.
No, I think Warwick did them, but they just never had them in stock. It was a nightmare, and it did seem like something that was a real gap in the market.
Yeah. Well, mono are probably the only people that do it properly.
Right.
But then how much is a double mono gig bag?
It's probably 100 quid, I think.
Yeah.
They are expensive. Yeah.
But then,
really,
don't
really
they
pricey.
Do... I'm sure they do a double case that's one bass, one guitar as well. Oh, I don't know if I imagined that or not. I'm sure I've seen that.
Yeah, you probably dreamt it.
Maybe I need to make it.
Yeah.
Okay, possibly. I think a mono dual double electric. I'm learning to Google things
while we go. It makes you sound like learning. You know more. It's
multitasking. I think it's... like 220, what, ranges about £280 at a certain store that one of you podcasters works at.
It is expensive.
I don't work in any stores, nor does Jay. I don't know what you're talking about.
It is expensive, but it's one of those things where I guess it's not only do the guitars need to be kept safe within, exactly, you know, within themselves, but they also need to be kept safe from each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you could just stick two guitars in a bag.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and that is a good reason for them being expensive. £220 still
a lot of money.
But I do think gig bags are kind of, they're different. I think they're a completely legitimate way to tour instruments these days, certainly with the mono ones. So they're kind of, yeah. I think of the mono things as being an alternative to a hard case. Yeah. Fine, you can't put them in a luggage hold, but, you know, but have you ever actually tried flying a Hiscox case?
No.
Like, they'll do a flight. And they'll be busted at the other end.
No, they won't.
Well, they will. Their integrity will be gone. They'll be
they won't.
I must have had some really violent,
baggage handlers.
People. Do you remember we spoke about this on the podcast when I went on tour somewhere?
I don't listen to you.
No.
So putting it in the hold, you came out with loads of damage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really?
I flew.
That's crazy. Vigier and. They have their own cases with them, and mine's just been absolutely perfect. Like, I would trust it in anything. But I think the monos are definitely—it's a lot lighter to carry on. And I need to add a correction to my Gretsch White Falcon earlier. The one I tried was only £3,500.
Oh, apologies. There we go. Bargain.
That's a Japanese one.
Yeah. Absolute bargain.
Super duper cheap. I think there was another guitar, which I won't be able to mention just yet because the video hasn't come out, that was a much larger price. So I'm getting muddled.
Wow. So basically, when you're... What was the series called?
I've always wanted to try one of those.
I've always wanted to try it. And it is literally you just trying out like between four and, I assume, £10,000 instruments.
Yeah, it's also going to include amps and pedals as well. It's going to be quite a versatile series.
I always wanted to try an Epiphone LP100.
I actually we got a new custom shop delivery at work today, and there was a blonde
thin line telly.
You saw the picture.
I saw the picture you put up.
Oh my goodness!
It looked fantastic.
It's not even that much money. Like, I saw it and I was like, oh yeah, this will be £3,500, and it wasn't. It's like £2,200. I think that's the wrong price. I think it's priced up wrong. It's a solid rosewood neck,
right? Okay. Line. Yeah, it looked really lovely.
It's the best Fender custom shop I have seen this year, and I hate Fender stuff. Momentarily, I'm on a, you know,
momentarily.
Yeah, for now. But so that I was pretty impressed. It was pretty cool. Jay Cross, we've actually been doing loads at Guitar Nerds HQ this week as well.
That's right. I feel like with Mark not being here, I do need to fly the Guitar Nerds flag a little.
Yeah.
And say that...
So I certainly won't.
No, absolutely. So this week, I don't know if you guys are all following us on YouTube. You should be. Because this week, Mark did a video which hasn't had a huge amount of views, which means you're in for a much better chance. We have got a massive giveaway going on. Mark moved house about 3 months ago, and whilst he was moving, he found loads of competition prizes that we'd done comps for, and we'd done competitions for, and nobody had ever claimed the prizes. So what we're going to do is bundle up all of the previous competition prizes that hadn't been claimed and give them away in one huge giveaway. So if you're listening to this and you were the...
Stuff. It's like a grand and a half's worth of gear.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. But if you're the individual who won the competition that we ran for the Bigfoot Trouble Booster, tough luck, because we are giving it to somebody else now. But what you need to do is pop over to the YouTube channel and watch the video. We've got some... There's a Bigfoot pedal. There's a White Atom. The Magnetic Effects White Atom, which is great.
Which is probably the best fuzz.
Probably the best... White Atom? Yeah.
That was a fuzz. That was the really quality fuzz that
That's got the... it's got both chips in it.
Oh, yeah.
Both, you know, not chips, but both style of fuzz. So that's really good. There's a barefoot button in there.
That's so cool.
The Yamaha cake something.
Yeah.
Stage cake.
Yeah. I mean, technically, that was a
stage cake. Is that what it's called? I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, Mary's got one of those.
Yeah, I do.
I love that that's a giveaway prize.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a load of stuff, and all you have to do is sign up to the Guitar Nerds newsletter. That's literally it, and then someone will win a load of clobber. So go and watch the video. Try and boost the ratings on that, because it hasn't had very many listens. No, I think it's because it's a big picture of Mark.
Yeah, I think so. Well, it's also if you look at the link on a square format like Facebook, rather than it saying massive, it looks like it just says ass, which probably doesn't help.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, which isn't great. But yes, so that is cool. Everyone should get involved. And actually, and
speaking of giveaways.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was going to mention it briefly because it is pretty cool. It's not.
I thought that was the link you were going for.
Oh, yeah, we'll go for that as a link. Okay. So speaking of giveaways, GAC, the shop that I work for, I've turned 25. We turned 25 this year. And so I have genuinely, I am giving away the bulk of my marketing budget's worth of stuff over the next 60 days. And I'm trying to do something from like every major brand.
Mm-hmm.
So there is so much stuff. So and we don't normally do shout outs on this, but this isn't really pushing.
This is celebrating.
This is like this a cool thing for everyone.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, I'm giving away loads of stuff. Should I tell you all what the last prize is? A £2,500 Music Man access.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That's a massive
prize. You just spoiled the crescendo of the giveaway?
I mean, technically, I've only spoiled it for myself because I'm in charge of it. So,
okay, that's fair enough.
But yeah, I guess Guitar Nerds Joe has just spoiled it for GAC Joe.
Right, okay.
We'll have words afterwards.
Okay.
Anyway, we should move on to some...
I'm not doing it.
Does that mean
you
I've
do
got
it,
to
yeah.
do it? Okay.
So now we will move on to the...
Nudes.
Okay, yeah, not bad.
And it's not the same when I have to say it, deliver it, and then do the afterwards bit. So first of all, there have been some rumblings...
In your stomach?
Yeah, sorry, yeah. I mean, these beers are really gassy. But yeah, there have been some rumblings of a particular new product by Electro Harmonix, Matt Knight.
Yes. Yes, there has. I thought you were going to say something else then, Joe, so I was like pausing. Is he going to say something else? No, he's going to leave it at that. Yes, someone has got hold of an Electro Harmonix catalogue that isn't released yet. Although I'm looking at the picture again and I can see an Eventide H9 in the background, so it must be at a store somewhere. Electro Harmonix, in all their amazingness of constantly releasing products, have put out a catalogue with products they haven't even released yet, or announced for that matter, because in there is the Super Ego Plus. They're what looks like the Super Ego freeze type pedal, but with a whole load of inbuilt effects as well, and a whole load of controls I can't make out because the photo is too blurry.
So we should add that this is obviously super.
It's all conjecture. Yeah, we don't really know anything about it.
No, exactly. But this is totally cool. What a great product! I mean, Electro Harmonix, the brand that put out a new pedal every 30 days.
It does seem very strange, doesn't it? The fact that there's because there's another one. I saw a video of the Hot Wax, which is another one of these combination pedals that EHX do every now and again.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Mary Spender loves the Electro Harmonix combination pedals.
I think they're great, but this the Hot Wax, I actually think has got a great name because it's a hot tubes on one side and a crayon on the other side.
Right.
So I think it's just
that is good.
It's a great name. I'm almost certain they came up with the name first and then worked backwards.
I mean, that makes way more sense than the turnip greens.
Yeah. But
hang on, I think there's going to be a drinking game going on during the podcast if we mention turnip greens anymore.
That's true. Someone had suggested, as we were having Mary Spender on the podcast, who basically lives and dies by the turnip greens, that if we say turnip greens on the podcast, everyone has to take a drink.
Right, okay. Well, hopefully these people aren't driving to work, as you said. But it just seems very strange because EHX seem to throw... caution to the wind generally when it comes to releasing products, and it's just they just stick them out in the open. And
I think it's because someone's constantly making them, and then when they're done, they're like, "God, just get it out there."
Yeah,
just
yeah.
like keep churning it.
Personally, I'm really looking forward to for the next compressor release. You know,
yeah, fine.
The fifth one this year.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So in other news, Gretsch have thrown something into the limited edition line of stuff. Now we've seen sort of the Fender Gretsch thing. People pull out loads of like FSR, as Fender want to call it. Did Gretsch also call it FSR?
Yeah.
Jay?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So there's loads of FSR stuff that seems to be that has been coming out over the last sort of 12 months, 2 years. But Gretsch haven't done one in a while, and they've popped out a limited edition, catchily named G5420TG.
Yeah, you mean 5420?
Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's 5420, yeah. Right.
Is that how you always say the Gretsch
is? It's 5420. It's named, like, that's how they...
Is that what you say?
Yeah, it's like the 6 series of the Japanese.
Right.
So anything that starts with a 6... is Japanese model. Anything starts with a 5.
I know that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but it's
just
60...
I always said them individually.
No.
Like, even when I worked in the shop, like, I've sold people guitars.
Oh, thank you for buying this Gretsch G5420.
Yeah, that's how I always said it.
All right, you robot.
I've said it on this podcast like that.
I was watching a video about this guitar earlier, and I heard it as the G5420TG.
That's very weird.
Wow, that is weird.
So, and that was from a different retailer.
But is that like Blink-182, Blink-182?
No, I think it's like, listen to the geezer who works for Fender.
He's more like some 41.
And he'll tell you that it's 5420.
Okay, cool. Fine. But yeah, but Mary Spender, you've been checking out the Gretsch.
Yeah, a slightly more affordable Gretsch at £863. And it is absolutely stunning. I really do like the candy apple red, deep gloss. It's got a Bigsby and gold hardware and an Adjust-O-Matic bridge with a rosewood base. And the only thing that comes to mind with that is that I sort of wonder about the tuning. I haven't played enough of them to really...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Realize whether or not it will keep its tuning. What do you guys think?
They're a bloody nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, Jay is notoriously anti-Bigsby. I do think Bigsby come... There is a problem when you go on to, like, budget-line Bigsbys.
I mean, anything that comes... In general, anything that comes from Japan has been worked in a little bit more. With these, I can say this, I had a Gretsch. I had a very similar one to this. I had a 5125, I think mine was
a 5125.
Yeah, that's right. Now I'm sure mine was a 5125, which was it had DeArmond single coils.
Oh, yes.
And the Bigsby, and it was, to begin with, it was a complete nightmare. And I was given a little tip by a friend of mine who was a real Gretsch aficionado, and he said, what you want to do with these is the first time you restring them, you put like pull the Bigsby up, so you take the strings off and then there's no tension there. You can then pull the Bigsby open, essentially, and there's a big, like, thick spring in there, and what you need to do is you need to work some of the tension out of that, because what will happen is the reason that they go out of tune is the spring, because it's so tense, it never goes back to the same place. So what you need to do is work some of the tension out, and then when you use the Bigsby, the spring will compress and then open up back to where it was before you added any pressure to it.
Right.
And that is what will make sure that it stays in tune. But the only way to get it to get to that point is to really give it some welly. So that was what I was suggested, and it did really work. And that's what I started doing when I would ever get in any of these guitars is in the shop, is I'd start doing that, work some of the tension out of the spring, and it made a world of difference. But until you do that, they are a nightmare.
Yeah, still, it's...
I think, oh, sorry, I was going to say that I thought the biggest problem is the fact that those wooden bridges aren't pinned down.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
the first time anyone ever changes them, they take the last string off, and then it falls off, and they're like... I don't know where that was on the guitar again. And yeah, then you've like totally ruined the intonation and probably how well the strings sit on the rest of the guitar as well.
Now, I have absolutely no experience in setting up guitars, but I had an Ibanez Art Core that had pretty much the same bridge problem. And I heard, and I don't know whether this is even allowed in the guitar community, but can you glue it down in some way?
Yeah,
can you secure it?
You can.
You can pin it, can't you?
Well, you can do either. You can pin it or you can glue it down. I mean, it really depends on what you want to do with it. The thing is...
I think the alternative here... Oh, sorry, no, go on.
Well, no, all I was going to say is it's the same as having a Floyd Rose in that...
Yeah.
These things are inherent... There's a trade-off between convenience and you know, the utility of the thing. And with a Gretsch, you will get that sound and you'll get the tremolo that you just can't really get from anything else, in the same way as you do with when you want to set up a Floyd Rose. It's a real pain, but you can do stuff with that guitar that you cannot do with, for example, a Les Paul, you know. And it's just it's part and parcel. And that was what I always tried to impress on people whenever they bought a Gretsch for the first time, is yes, they look cool, just bear in mind it will be a pain, but you'll get used to it. It's whatever.
Actually, as part of the GAT giveaway, we've got a signed Gretsch Streamliner.
Okay, signed by who?
This is an excellent question. They are Over and Over, I think.
Sorry? Oh, is that a band?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, you should know. They're like a 90s punk band.
Okay.
I think it's Over and Over. Okay. It probably isn't that name now. Okay. That you didn't know it. I expect you to know all punk things.
Okay. I don't know what that is.
Neither do I.
Okay.
But I'm sure there's a market for it.
Yeah.
As it's free.
Yes.
I could always take
Tika. Should have just got Bo Banton to sign it. Then I'd be in for that competition.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Great. Okay.
Carrick, do you want me to continue this
on? Yeah,
okay. So Daredevil Effects released a new pedal this week. Daredevil Effects. So I think, without a doubt, the strangest trend in 2017 for me is cocked wahs.
Why is this strange? They make everything sound better.
Like, why are so many companies bringing out cocked wahs at the moment?
Well, I mean, by so many, you mean two. Like, one, which is a Brighton-only tiny little brand.
No, not at all.
Oh, no, Electro-Harmonics did as well.
Electro-Harmonics brought out the Cockfight ages ago. And we've talked about at least two other...
The Electric Death one, which is the one
I
use.
Yeah, that's the one you've got.
Don't forget the Boss SP1 in the Boss Box Forward Collector Set, available in store near you soon.
Yeah,
have we spoken much about the Box 40?
Yeah, you weren't here.
Oh, wasn't I?
No,
really, Matt, is that true?
Maybe.
Did I miss discussion about the Box 40?
We didn't talk about it a lot. We decided to make a conscious decision not to talk about it because it had been talked about enough.
Oh, okay, fine.
It's too late. We've sold them all now.
Anyway, the Daredevil have brought out the Cocked and Fearless, which is another double pedal, which has got one of their fuzz pedals, the name of which I can't remember now, and the one of their cocked wah. It's a cocked wah that, again, I can't remember the name. Right. Atomic Cock. That's okay. What it's called. It's called the Atomic Cock. Yeah, I know. Yeah. So this is the two pedals in one. Cocked wah seems like a very... I don't get it. I don't get it.
Why wouldn't you only want to play everything in a really specific band of low
mids? That just doesn't make any sense to me. But I watched the video on it, and it does sound good. It does sound good. I just don't really understand it myself. Because you could just use a wah pedal.
No,
and have a bit of self-control.
You'd have to take the spring out.
No, you wouldn't. No, only if you had a bass wah pedal.
Oh, yeah.
No, if
you took
the spring out, it would always return to off.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I forget that guitar ones are different from bass ones.
Yeah, they're not spring-loaded. So, but there we go.
Yeah, but still, I think that's going to be super cool. Okay, cool. Just because we need to crack through a bit more of the news. Has Matt spoken about a thing?
God,
I haven't.
Okay, go on, Matt. Talk about the funnest one out of your ones.
Okay, so this year at Summer NAMM, one of my favourite sort of boutique companies out there at the moment is Analog Outfitters, which I briefly mentioned a little while ago. They make the scanner where they rehouse old Hammond vibrato units in clear plastic kind of head shells and then turn it into a working amplifier. So when you buy one, you get like a Hammond vibrato that could have been from like the 30s or the 40s or the 50s. It's amazing, really. They're kind of really good at like basically repurposing all this tech, and they do some real kind of like amazing little amps, and they redesign and repurpose a load of old tech, which is super cool. But they've designed their own amplifier called the Cadet, which is a 10 watt EL84 based single control amplifier in one of the craziest kind of combo shapes I've ever seen.
Yes,
really,
it is the ultimate of all chassis.
Hexagon.
It is a hexagon. I was just about to.
I had to count the sides. I was like, "Is it a trapezoid?" No, it's a hexagon.
That's right, listeners. You heard this correctly. A hexagon shaped amplifier.
It is beautiful.
It is. Everything this company do are totally amazing. They do a massive range of kind of low wattage recording amps, I guess.
Yeah, and I think they're usually built to order.
Yeah, they
are. If you don't live too far away from them, I don't know what the catchment area is, you can actually try one at home for 10 days for free.
So good.
Wow.
They crowdsourced the name for this as well. I mean, I don't know how. Yeah. I mean, this seems a bit random, but yeah, they did crowdsource the name.
Really?
I mean,
In the UK, we did crowdsource the name for a boat. Hence, Boaty McBoatface.
Yeah.
Boaty McBoatface. Legendary.
And they ignored it anyway.
But they are an awesome company. I mean, I was so close to buying one of those scanners at some point, but they aren't cheap. I think they're like $1,900.
Well, do you know how much this hexagon shape Cadet is? Because it's pretty affordable in their range.
No, I didn't. I didn't read that far, or watch that far into the video.
Mary Spender did her research on the internet.
You'll come to learn. You don't need to research these things. Just make it up as you go along.
However, it is $999, which I thought was actually outstanding price for such a cool little amplifier.
Yeah, that is considering they're all hand built and like. What the company does, it's amazing. Because I was actually looking, you can customize your own amps on their website, including different wood finishes and road signs.
What?
They will get old road signs and then bend them into the shape of a chassis and then use it for your amplifier, or like car license plates, or old carpet. Yep.
This is like so
essentially,
ultimate hipster
essentially
company.
Anything. Anything that will fold.
Some roadkill.
Yeah. It is kind of a hipster brand in one way. But yeah, amazing, really. They're a very, very cool company. I really hope to see some of it in the UK.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out. That's Analog Outfitters. Cool. Okay. And something that's kind of slightly not a product, just to wind up the news.
The listeners.
The news. Mary was going to tell us about Tab Bank, which is, and we don't talk about these sort of things much because generally speaking there aren't that many interesting ones, but this is an app.
Yes, I think it's a suitable app for any cover gig guitarist or singer and guitarist, and it's actually something that I back in the day when I was doing my 4-hour cover sets could have really done with, rather than printing out new songs for my songbook every week, or not even being able to handle some of the requests that I was given, because this is more of like you can import tabs from the web, so from Ultimate Guitar. You can build your own personal library in the app, and then you've just got it on your iPad and you can just recite from the iPad. And I didn't think that this would be used much other than for cover sets until, and I'm not sure if he would even like me saying, but I saw Joey Landreth using a different app, but the same sort of format, for his own set. And he had his whole set list on an iPad Pro. And it was all there, all the information. So that, you know, obviously if you're doing like an hour and a half set and you just have a mind blank and you just want to know some of the lyrics, or you probably don't need the chords as much. But when it comes to lyrics, it's pretty damn handy. But this looks great. I downloaded it earlier and had a little whiz through. It's really easy to use and is by the same guys that built the Chord Bank app, which is something that I've used for a long time. So it looks pretty great and it's free, but there is an upgraded version where you'd have to pay like £8 or something.
I wonder how the licensing works with something like that, because surely you're, you know, that's someone's intellectual property. You know, not that I'm just playing devil's advocate here, but because I seem to remember when I was a kid going on tab sites, they were always getting closed down because someone would tab out a Metallica song or something and Lars Ulrich didn't like that. And, or, you know, maybe not that, but so, I'm sure that that sort of stuff was happening all the time. So I wonder where that, I don't know, maybe not, maybe I'm imagining things, but I would have thought there'd be licensing still, issues.
They must have thought about that, and I guess like the same thing for Ultimate Guitar. Like I've used them for years.
I mean, that's
odd.
Yeah,
like,
Ultimate Guitar's been
the whole time I've been playing
years.
Guitar.
Yeah.
So I guess they've just figured it out, and they have some sort of, I don't know whether they've just sort of like thought, let's just let people play these songs because they obviously love these songs. So they probably already bought the record. So
if
being
you have
able
a,
to play it.
If the place has a PRS license, doesn't that just, that aren't you supposed to, in theory, give like a set list of what you played and then they pay the artist?
Yeah.
Is that not the thing? So
yeah, but that's not really what this is though, is it? Because this is an app that's teaching you how to play other people's songs. I guess maybe
I
if they're just...
It's not teaching you how to play them. I think it's more of like a library. So instead of you just printing out guitar tabs off the web,
yeah,
you just import them into this app. So I don't think... I think it can also work for your own songs as well. So I think that's maybe where they might get away with it. So you don't just like, you're not just dealing with other people's music and that sort of copyright infringement, but you're putting your own stuff in there for record, or, you know, even taking your stuff to a band and just being able to share it on the app. And then they have the lyrics and the chords right there and then. So it'd be good for a house band as well.
Cool. Perhaps Patreon listener and Guitar Nerds House Legal Department, Laurie Anstis, can fill us in.
Yes, the Guitar Nerds lawyer.
Yes, yeah. So maybe, Laurie, if you're listening to this, fill us in on the legality of this in the Facebook group at a later date.
Yes, absolutely. Right, okay.
Moving swiftly on,
we're going to go into some... questions. It just doesn't,
it doesn't
feel
ha-
right,
it doesn't right
when I have to sort of usher
you
myself
need to,
in.
You need to interrupt someone.
Yeah.
We basically, you need
questions.
Somebody.
Questions.
Even
yes,
that was
okay. So our first question today is from the incredibly named Bruce Bacon, who actually emailed this in specifically to Mark Packham, and then Mark Packham, who is on holiday in Cornwall, forwarded it to me to read out. So Bruce Bacon says... have the last 12 months been the year of compressors for both guitar and bass? It seems like every significant manufacturer, Boss, Keeley, J-Rocket, Seymour, Duncan, etc., has put out a compressor with defining features that reshape our perception of compression. I can't think of any other time that this has happened in the market. What triggered this? Did a new chip allow advanced compression to be achieved, or was it copycat syndrome a la the Clone Wars?
It's a great question.
It's a really solid question, hence why I think Mark took time out of his holiday to forward it. But yes, he's absolutely right. There has been a shed ton of compression.
We have.
And I guess we should discuss the reason why there's been a shed ton of compression this year.
Go on, then.
Well, no. I'm not supposed to answer the question, am I? I know the answer.
I think basically everyone had done with their drive pedals and they were like, probably just move on to
something
else now.
That's a great point. I do think the year before was the year of the transparent drive.
And this year is the year of the coctoir and compressors.
Oh, I don't think three coctoirs warrants it. But certainly he's absolutely right in that we've seen, you know, we've seen a ton of stuff like TC putting out the hypergravity.
Of course, was last year.
Whatever. Boss put out the... whatever the Boss one's called.
BP1X.
Yeah, okay. But
and
yeah.
Then I've got one to add, the Orange Compressor. Wasn't that April this year?
Yeah, of course. There yeah. it is.
Of course. Yeah. There we go. The we see who works for who now. We see.
I don't work for Orange. I'm not. Well.
I actually think that, if anything, the big trend in compressors is the blend knob has been appearing on a lot more compressors recently.
I think
that's really good because I don't really like compression pedals, but I do see the... I don't like how much they alter the tone in general. Like, I could never get on with the CS3 because it was too much. Even at a low setting, it was too much. And I think having the blend knob is really good way around it.
That's true, but I also actually think it's a different type of compression that's becoming popular. Yeah, like
that's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, I think it's
multi-band, isn't it? It's rack style, studio style compression, which incidentally the compressor isn't. And that's not to say that I much prefer like vintage style compression, but you know, Electro Harmonix have been putting out sort of vintage style compressors. Orange, we've seen MXR put out their Dynacomp in like a mini format. But I think what's really dominated everything is this all of a sudden, you know, sort of 10 rotary control multi band compressors have started becoming really popular on boards. Because of course a vintage compressor is great, but it does one thing. It's either they're great for bass, or they're great for, like, you know, country, but you don't really see them outside of that. Whereas multiband is kind of
yeah,
much broader.
I think you're right though. Like going from transparent boost to basically like tone buffer, because that's what a lot of people are using compressors for now, as like an always on kind of thing. So less of the squash and more of the kind of super nice sparkly studio finish, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, just a great pedal to have on your board, and I think that's what a lot of the compressors coming out have started to kind of follow that trend. But also, I think because there's so many companies out there, like companies obviously do talk, but I think it is also like just partly coincidence that everyone sort of comes, because everyone's working on probably a drive of fuzz and, you know, whatever at the same time. It just so happens that they just all happen to appear at a similar time.
True,
or over a 12-month time period. Anyway.
I do think multi-band compression has changed it. I think it's made it accessible to more players. I think having multi-band compression has made it accessible to metal players as well. But also, like, the reason that a lot of people don't use compression is because it's so all or nothing. So having dynamic compression, which is what multi-band offers... That opens the doors to loads of other people. Mary, you actually use a compressor as the only sort of proper functional musician. You actually use a compressor live.
Yes, I always have it on.
And
it's
you don't play
on.
Country, which is...
I don't play country, but I do play that sort of finger-style-y country, sometimes riff. So it's really useful to have an even sound all across the strings. And I was using an MXR custom comp for 2 years.
Oh, the best one.
It's just really simple to use, wasn't it? But I have now switched to a different, different compressor on my pedal board, which
Let's
actually...
Let's not mention that.
I mentioned it earlier, didn't I? And it just fits onto my pedal train, my Nano Plus pedal train, which is good. But I just need it. I think I was actually recording a video yesterday and I was trying to get the tone right in my amps before filming, and without the compressor it would sound terrible. So I don't know whether that's because some of my playing needs some practicing. Maybe
no,
my
it's definitely the pedal making everything sound better.
Yeah. Well, that's going to keep pedal companies in business, isn't it? If we just keep saying that. But I think, I as a player definitely need a compressor, and even Mr. Lee Anderton told me so in a video, which you should check out on Anderton's TV.
God damn it.
You could get Joe the sack.
Great. Yeah. Okay.
Nailed it.
Okay, well, yeah, I think that sort of... Yeah, the... All right, fine. Okay, so Mike Heath asks, the podcast often talks about double amp setups and Matt's three amp setup. If this is so common, why aren't amp companies making modular setups that easily allow for people to use multiple amps in an affordable way? And is there any real advantage to using two or more amps for one guitar?
This is another good question. Where are these people coming
from?
I know.
This is great. But we kind of briefly touched upon this sort of thing earlier with Mary, I guess, with the double orange amp setup with the Thunder pickup. I mean, the little Thunder kind of makes sense for having a two amp setup because it specifically is sending out two signals. But then I guess that is the point behind a double amp.
So, it fills out your sound more, doesn't it? You know, if you pair two amps that sound quite different, you know, so one amp covers the mid-range and one covers top and bottom, you get a much bigger sound. So I tend to find that even though I'm sending like effectively a dual mono signal a lot of the time, if I turn one off, you lose so many like frequencies. So you actually want a dual amp set up to almost sound like one amp. That's kind of, unless you're running like ping pong delays, that's how I kind of always see it. Is actually you want two amps to sound like one bigger amplifier.
Well, that's exactly it, and I think you've touched upon the other point to use two amplifiers is a stereo setup. If you're using sort of ping ponging delays or stereo reverbs and things like that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And actually, Billy Sheehan, Take a Drink, also uses a two amp setup for the same thing, in that he has one amp, which he has in an upside down smile EQ format, and one in a smiley EQ format. So one dealing specifically with his mids and the other with his lows and his highs in order to create a kind of a flat response across the two.
And I mean, he's obviously mentions about it being sort of affordable. It is very affordable. I mean, if you contact someone like James at Bright Onion, you know, he'll build you like a dual output box that'll invert the phase and ground lift on one side, run into your drive pedals, into that box, into one amp, and then out into your delays and reverbs into another. And then you get a really simple kind of wet dry setup.
I mean,
you don't even necessarily need stereo pedals. Well, no, but I'm assuming he's probably already got like two amps. That's why he's saying, why do people not make it more modular or easy?
Yeah, true, true.
But that's the best way to do it, I think. Because, you know, not everyone has. I don't actually necessarily like using stereo effects as much as I like running it one side wet and one side dry, because it means that you can run one side with the effects blend like almost all the way up, but you still get a much more cutting sound from the dry side of the amplifier. If you run like a really big reverb in stereo, you don't necessarily cut through as much.
Yeah, of course. Mary, did you ever try and do this sort of thing before you had the Little Thunder pickup, or is it the Little Thunder that made you move to a double amp setup?
It was the Little Thunder that made me have to purchase a bass amp as well. I'm wanting to experiment more with the wet and dry signal because of my Orange Rocker 32 with the stereo capabilities of that. So I guess, could that be seen as an alternative to two amps on stage?
I think
if you
so.
Can.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can just mic up each speaker, can't
well,
you?
That's and kind of it.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
The
yeah.
Rocker 32 kind of changed a few things here. Like, because me, it wasn't just the stereo. It wasn't actually at all that, because I've never really got into those things. I've never really seen a massive advantage to stereo effects. But what is totally cool is the wet-dry signal idea. That sort of that vintage way of running effects where you can have with the Rocker 32 having one of your speakers running completely clean and one completely affected. I think that's wicked. And the 32 is opening up experimental doors for people even before they have like a dual amp setup. It's just a shame you have to do it in the effects loop rather than
in the front end.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it's because if you use a lot of drive in the Orange, it just makes things nice, sound much nicer.
Yeah, they've
it?
Got to stick to their core ethos, don't they?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that is true. Okay, cool. I think we've got time for one last question before we wrap up today. Jay Cross, you got a preference?
No, you are the host.
Okay, fine.
You have to remember that we have not seen these questions before, and they we're answering them on the fly.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so Arne Letter says, what are the best British amps being built at the moment? I have a Laney Lionheart that I want to upgrade. I've been thinking about going boutique, but I want to source something made over here. By over here, he means Britain. What are my options? Jay Cross, what are his options?
Well, it's interesting that the Laney Lionheart is brought up because
they're not actually made over.
Well, no, and I think that's the point. I think that's
not anymore.
I think that's the point is that because they were made originally. They were made in the headstock warehouse in Birmingham.
Yeah, in Birmingham.
Which is and they were absolutely fantastic amps. And I think still the current Lionhearts are still really, really good amps. But they did lose a little bit of that je ne sais quoi.
So I have a Laney Lionheart as okay. well. So what year did they start moving away from British building?
2013?
Yeah, something 13, like that.
13, I want to say.
About then, because there was a bit of a fallout about the change in speaker.
Is your reverb digital or is it spring?
Does it make a big crashy sound if you kick it or drop it?
No. Then it's I think it was 2015 digital. I bought it.
See,
so
I think
it's the later one.
Yeah. We found out because a customer... I sold one to someone and someone bought it back and went... it's not right. And I was like, what? And he was like, oh, there's something not right about it. And then we like looked into it and like, oh, it says made in China in the back.
Yeah, it was like, really weird. It came out of nowhere. And it was a real shame because if they'd just brought out a new range of, if they called it like the Lionheart
Pro
X or something like that, you know, I don't know. The you know
Lionheart China.
Probably not that. probably not that. But if they called it, you know, something else, if they'd given it a suffix, I think it would have continued to be a great amp. And it is a shame. It seems like Laney have gone about things in a slightly different way, which is instead of, you know, going down the route of Marshall or Vox and saying, yeah, we still make amps in the UK, it's just they're £3,000. Laney just went, we can't make them for this price anymore, so we're going to move the production to China. I think if they'd continue to make them and just charged a bit more, still would have been great, you know. So but we're sort of getting away from the point. We're not actually answering the question.
No
I was actually going to give a shout out to the brand that we got given an amplifier from, Davis Amplification. So sort of playing around with it this weekend, and I mean, if he's looking at the Lionhearts,
these are even the same color
amps. Yeah, I mean, these basically the 2C8, which is a 8-watt all valve amp, clean drive effects loop, you know, 4, 8, and 16 ohm for all cabs. You've got a channel switching. It's a really amazing amp, and I mean, inside it is like incredible, awesome finish as well. It's like a car seat finish. It's like it's not leather, but it feels like kind of really plushy. It doesn't feel like Tolex, but just a great amp for kind of home use. Probably just on the border for small gigs. You really would need to mic it up if you're going to do anything bigger, but for recording at home, it's like absolutely superb. And going to what we were saying a minute ago about effects loops and wet dry rigs, this has actually got a dry control and a wet control on the front for the effects loop, so you can blend in how much you want of each signal.
Great. How much does it cost?
They are £799, and they are all built in the UK.
Yeah, that's
wow. very reasonable.
That's the
it
perfect.
It is incredibly reasonable.
And if I remember correctly, the geezer drove it to your house, Matt.
He drove it to my house, and he is also a super nice dude.
So that's part of the service, right? Let's just say it's part of the service.
Oh, yeah, why not? Yeah.
He'll drive it to your house. He'll bring you a coffee as well, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Is there an option? There's an option on the website. You have to specify what coffee you want delivered with
soy
the
milk latte. Yeah. With one.
Whilst we're on the
sugar
boutique kick, we should also give a shout out to Honey Boy Amps.
Yeah, fantastic.
I mean, again, neither of these amps are giggable in comparison. I mean, he hasn't specified what Lionheart size.
I'm assuming it's the 5, because only the small one was made in the UK, right?
Oh, really? No, they all were.
Were they?
Yeah.
I thought it was only the Diddy one.
No, I'm pretty sure they all were. But anyway.
But then, and I guess kind of, well, I guess ruling the roost at the moment are Orange and Marshall. At the time, I mean, not of the boutique end of things, but still making great British amps.
Marshall aren't making that much in the UK.
Oh, not really. I guess so. Is the Jubilee British still?
No.
Amusingly.
I think only the Astoria.
The Astoria, I think, is the right. only...
Is it still current, the Astoria?
Do you still have one in the shop?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Then, yeah, they're still current.
Yep. Cool. Okay. Well, Arne, I hope that answers your question. Anyway, that is pretty much all we've got time for this week. Which brings us.
Take a breath. Yeah, okay. Take a breath. You can do this.
I know.
You can do this. I know. We talked about it, listeners. We talked about this. I'm gonna give you a moment to take a breath and compose yourself. We talked about this a little bit beforehand. Joe was a little bit worried about the outro. He said, "Oh, there's so much stuff, and Mark just remembers it. You'll be fine."
Okay.
Just take
Are
a breath.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
If you want to hear more, you can head over to patreon.com, where for as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular podcast early and ad-free. Or you can spend $5 a month, and that gets you bonus content, interviews, mini-series, Gear of Yesteryear, Branton's Rant on probably the best bit of it, plus an extra 30 minutes of regular episode every week, all for just $5. At $10 a month, it makes you one of the super special turbo executive producers, which gets you all of the previous mentioned content, plus you get your name read out on the podcast like these fabulous people.
Take it away, Mary.
Okay. Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Carlos Mancha, Andrew Margo, Mark Cross, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quinn, Bill Thompson, Laurie Anstersmoo, Colin Anderson.
Wait,
not
so
as
someone.
Easy.
So Brad Pitt isn't a Patreon member.
No, Brad Pitt isn't. Brad Page is, but.
Brad Pitt.
See that? Not as easy as it sounds. I do that every week.
All right, it's not about you, mate.
Hang on, Joe. You do it so it's not even distinguishable what the names are. I was trying to be clear.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
You should have, when Mary stumbled, you should have adjusted your tempo.
Oh, I didn't, did I?
Any good rhythm section should.
Okay, fine. All right,
I didn't stumble. I just took a creative pause.
Yeah,
okay.
Changed time signature halfway through.
Yeah.
But yes, we're going to move over to the Patreon episode now. So if you want to hear us talking about Vigier guitars, boutique guitars, and what they do right, then head over there right now. If you want to get involved and suggest topics for our Patreon episodes, then head over to facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. That is what we are. We are forum, aren't we? Yeah.
Yeah,
cool. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds, and you can subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. You can also subscribe to Mary Spender at youtube.com/Mary Spender and on Instagram and Twitter at Mary Spender as well. Thank you, everyone, for listening to me. Absolutely.
Well, I think you did all right.
I think it was made up for by having Mary Spender as a guest and really you two actually reading the notes. That's really good. Thanks. Anyway, cheers, everyone. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.